Okay, my name is Dr. Francina Turner, and I'm conducting an oral history interview for the Reparative Histories and the Black Experience Oral History Project at University of Maryland. Could we start with, again, with you saying your name?
Hi, my name is Kelechi Enyenya Abakuru, and I was a student at University of Maryland from 2007 to 2011.
Okay, what's your hometown?
So I was born actually in Washington, D.C., and I lived in like the Lanham, like Greenbelt area until about the first grade. And then around then I moved to Detroit, just outside Detroit, to Southfield, Michigan, and went to school from first grade through high school in Southfield, Michigan. And then after that, I went to University of Maryland. Oh, I'm sorry, you're muted.
Could you talk to me a little bit about your life prior to enrolling at the University of Maryland, like your home community, family composition, things of that nature?
Yeah, so I am a first generation Nigerian American. My mother immigrated to the U.S. in the late 80s with my father. When I was around 3 years old and a few months after my mom had my youngest brother, my father actually passed away in a car accident. So it was my mom and my mom and my older brother, my younger brother, the four of us together. So not too long after my father passed away, we moved to Michigan. And so we pretty much lived there, and that's like home base for us ever since. Again, first generation Nigerian, was very connected to the Nigerian community in Detroit and Southeast Michigan in general. A lot of friends and close family that, you know, people who became family, who were family friends, or people who knew each other from Nigeria who reconnected in the United States. And that networking community was really important to me in like building who I was and how I wanted to, like my focus on education, who I wanted to be. I was really, you know, very proud of being Nigerian. So I feel like those were kind of the two biggest kind of catalysts for me growing up. I wanted to go to University of Maryland initially because I've always had family in the area. I had an uncle that went to University of Maryland, got his master's at University of Maryland. And I had always visited Maryland, so it wasn't like I was ever too far from the area. I have family in PG County, so I visited PG County a lot, and always wanted to, you know, one day live in Maryland. And so when I did get an opportunity in college to move, I chose University of Maryland.
Now, you mentioned having family in the area, but was there anything in specific about the university that made you pick it as where you wanted to attend?
I think that honestly, like, family was probably the biggest thing for me. I didn't apply to too many schools that were out of state in Michigan. I saw myself going to University of Michigan, and then the way that I got waitlisted for University of Michigan, and then I felt like going to Maryland was a lot more attractive, like after I got waitlisted. Maryland was a school that I wanted to go to, but I didn't really ever see myself going out of state until they gave me the acceptance letter. And then it became something that was a lot more real for me. So that was kind of exciting.
How did you go about determining what you wanted to major in at the University of Maryland?
So major was kind of an adventure. When I came into University of Maryland, I started in the honors program, and I started as an aerospace engineering major. And I didn't feel like that was a good fit for me, like, pretty quickly. Most of the time, I felt like in a lot of ways, I knew kind of what I wanted to do with school, and I thought that engineering was what I wanted to do with school, but And like just going through the classes and like doing the stuff more and more, it was one difficult for me to keep up. I felt like I was doing a lot to keep up, like trying to keep up in the summers, like taking, summer classes to try to keep up. And then also I just felt like it interested me less and less the longer and longer I was in college. So I felt like I was in one place where I was spending a lot of energy and effort trying to make something work that's not really working and I don't really love. And conversely, I was spending a lot of time in student groups and spending a lot of time learning from my other classmates, learning about what they're doing. And I remember I was in it, so Community Roots was a student group that I was a part of for a long time, and I had a lot of connections with still to this day. And I remember I was studying in our student group office with a friend of mine, and I was like trying to catch up in aerospace stuff. Like I was doing like calculus stuff and trying to, just like study, just like stay in a place and focus. And it was cool because we would just study together, but he was working on his thesis, his American Studies thesis. And so he's explaining to me stuff that he's doing, and it was really the first time that I had ever thought about American studies as something that I could do, and something that would be like interesting to me to like do something like that. And the more and more I learned about it, the more it became something I wanted to do. And so after that semester, was like my second semester, I was not doing well in aerospace. I was on academic probation, or I was going to be on academic probation. And I decided to change my major to American Studies and just transfer my credits and start there. And after that, I felt a lot more comfortable both with like the subject matter and then also just, keeping up with classes. I felt like it was kind of a 180 as far as grades went because it was something that I felt, one, I was interested in outside of class, and then also it was something that didn't feel like I don't know. Like I felt like I knew how to study for it. Like it was something that wasn't like I was catching up so much. Like I was more like writing how I thought about things or how I felt about things and like ideas that I had like thought about for a while, as opposed to like trying to learn things for the first time that I wasn't as interested in. So that was definitely a change.
If you could walk me through your memories of your first of your earliest memories of being on campus as a freshman.
My earliest memories of being on campus as a freshman, probably moving in. So move-in day is one, like you don't really know how things are gonna go because you have you're meeting your roommate and like you're meeting the people on the floor for the first time. And the way that it shook out, I had two roommates. And so we like you're in kind of a closed space. And I ended up like one of the things that was really cool and like really helped break the ice is that one of my roommates I really got close with like right away. And so one of the things that we did, I think the first or second night, was just like, well, let's like walk from one end of campus to the other because neither of us have been on campus. And we were like, if we walk campus, then we walk campus together, And so we did that like from, because we were in Denton and we walked to like Susquehanna, I think, like across the parking lot there, like past the business school and stuff like that. And just kind of like walked around like North Campus, and like South Campus, excuse me, a little bit after that. And I felt like that to me was like something that made me really enjoy being on campus, just like the freedom to just like do something like that and like really feel like I can explore and meet people. And also like I'm exploring and meeting people with somebody who's kind of like in the same boat as me. And yeah, that was probably my earliest experience that I remember that I hold on to.
Did you live on campus your full time at Maryland?
No. So I lived on campus my freshman year and my sophomore year. After my sophomore year, my family felt it was better for me to live off campus with my uncle so that I can focus on my grades, which it had its own struggles because commuting from like Glendale to University of Maryland was just difficult because I wasn't driving, so I spent a lot of time back and forth commuting. But I mean, ultimately, it was beneficial because I felt like it did let me compartmentalize things. And I feel like I had some growing up to do, as far as just like being able to like be focused on school when I'm at school. But yeah, that was kind of how that went for my junior year. And then my senior year, I moved into a place off campus again, but near campus with a few of my other friends.
You mentioned earlier about student groups and one student group that you still have ties to the students who were in there with you to this day. So what kind of student organizations did you belong to while you were at Maryland?
So I worked with a few of them. So the one that I was referring to that I still have a lot of ties to is was Community Roots. I'm not sure how active they are now. But Community Roots was like a multi-ethnic and multicultural group on campus that was focused on bringing other groups together to like talk about different ways we can figure out things for so figure out avenues to affect social change. And so we had a bunch of different projects that we tried to do, but like the main thing was Thursday meetings where we would research a topic and we would have a presentation about an issue that would bring in some facts or maybe an expert on campus who would talk about the issue, and then we would have a discussion after that about how people feel about it or what people think about it, but in a guided way that introduced like some base of knowledge at the beginning. And then we also, from there, tried to use that as a platform to organize around a bunch of different issues. But a couple of issues that we tried to organize around were trying to preserve equity and diversity and keeping Dr. Black's job. We were trying to do a lot of things to try to kind of push back some of the tuition hikes and like the changes in how the school was defining some of its programming. Like they wanted to change the arts and humanities majors into like an umbrella major and kind of consolidate African American studies and American studies and women's studies and Native American studies in a way that we didn't feel like really gave the universe, that really showed that the university was invested in those curriculum. And so we organized around those issues. And so that was like the bulk of my time with Community Roots, putting like programming and then like organizing things like that. And then also I was, I mean, I was a part of a lot of student groups. I felt like kind of in that vein, like you end up being a part of a bunch of student groups, either whether like formally or informally, but there are a lot of different student groups that I was a part of, like went to different meetings. But that was probably like the one I was the most affiliated with.
Okay, so when I was preparing for your interview, I did find a mention of you in the Eclipse, and there was a protest around Dr. Black and a drop in Black enrollment at the university in 2010. And the organization was called STAIR. Do you remember what STAIR stood for?
So I don't remember what STAIR stood for. I do remember STAIR being pretty informal, and like it was more of a coalition than like a standalone like group. It was a lot of groups that we had all worked together, and we had all collaborated together to whether in our student group meeting, like in our Community Roots meeting, hosting these other groups or going to these other groups and talking about issues or just like being present at their meetings, we had built networks to respond to issues that were like similar to this. So when so we first heard about the issue of Dr. Black losing his job. Well, so we, for context, when we had heard about the consolidation of the majors, and we had heard about the drop in Black enrollment, and some, and all of these things were kind of just like swirling, and but we didn't really have an avenue to respond. And then one of my mentors, Solomon Kamajong, and then Dr. Ronald Ziegler at the Mimbrero Cultural Center, they let me know, and then one of my good friend at the time, Jazz Lewis, we both spent a lot of time in the world together, and so they let us know that they were consolidating the position of Director of Equity and Enrollment and getting rid of Dr. Black. So like both things had to happen. Like Dr. Black couldn't be there, and the position had to go from full time to part time. We were upset, and so we tried to, you know, organize around it. So we met with Dr. Black, along with some of my other friends who organized in some other areas on campus, and we met with Dr. Black, and we decided, like, we're going to have, like, a speak out, and, you know, we tried to get as many people as we could, and I think that, you know, when you're used to organizing things like this on campus, like, you think that there's going to be a turnout of, like, a couple dozen people. But, you know, we put out a Facebook event, and then it was like a couple hundred people responded that they were interested, or they wanted to come, or they wanted to say something, because there were so many parts of the university community that were affected by Dr. Black and the work that he had done. So, I mean, like, obviously that's something where we're trying to organize something to respond. But, you know, I'm sure, like, if you know anything about organizers, like a lot of the time, like, the momentum happens. Like, it's not something that you create. Like, it is something that you try to get in front of. And so we had this speak out for Dr. Black. At the speak out, one of our, you know, friends that were there and said that they wanted to march. So they were going to be there at 12 noon, and they were going to march to, and they were going to march to the administration building. They were going to demand his job back. And none of us had a plan for any of that. So we stayed there most of the night, like trying to figure out how that was going to go off without, you know, getting a bunch of people arrested. And yeah, we were able to have a speak out that started at Nimbrero at the amphitheater. And then we marched across to the Keldon Mall, and then down to the administration building. There were a couple hundred students there, and we signed letters demanding, you know, what we wanted, which was that the university make an investment in equity and diversity beyond just keeping Dr. Black's job, but for all of these sort of cuts. And we just posted all of those letters on the pillars of the administration building, because they have to read all of those complaints. They can't just throw them out. So we pinned them there, and I don't know. I feel like we didn't want to do anything any crazier than that. But a few people ended up meeting with administration inside, and you know, delivering the message that that's what we were looking for.
What was the outcome of that collection of actions?
I feel like that's a harder thing to define. I do, like, Dr. Black, I do think that he was removed from that position. He's a tenured professor, so I think that he completed his term at UMD in the French department and retired, but mentioned that he was really touched by the organizing that was done on his behalf. But I do think that the university definitely backed off as far as consolidating those majors, at least when I was there. I don't know what's happened since. And I do know that there was some pushback to the budget cuts that were proposed. I really don't know, to be honest, how the university's trend has been as far as Black enrollment. But I do know that we like made a point of saying that, for a county, for a school that is in Prince George's County, that it's patently embarrassing that we can't have Black enrollment that's, reflective of the community, much less like the country. But that's I you know it's hard to gauge successes and things like that, especially because you don't know what's the thing that makes a board trustee or like the a regent change his mind, his or her mind, excuse me. So it's something where you just kind of do what you can and then hope that something that you want happens.
What was, if you, if when you think back, what was your and kind of other Black students' understanding of why there was such a steep drop in Black enrollment? I think I read that it was 30%.
Well, one, I think that one, there were other schools that seemed attractive around. I know that a lot of students prefer Howard if they're coming to this area. But also, I feel like University of Maryland, one, their enrollment standards, they changed enrollment standards in a way that they were trying to pursue a higher rating, like a world US World Report like ranking. And as a lot of people will tell you, like a lot of these scoring systems, like SAT, ACT, are racialized scores. And I think even back then, I knew people who were organizing around that idea that like these testing methods or these enrollment methods or even these evaluation methods that US World Report and like use to evaluate schools exclude Black students. So pursuing these standards will have you in a position where you're excluding Black students, where you're not looking at the nuances, where you're trying to get the GPAs. And I think that there are arguments for why universities try to do that, whether it be for funding purposes or what have you. But I think that institutions of higher education are supposed to be places where we're like interacting with these issues and meeting these challenges, or at least being confronted with these challenges, right? Like not sweeping them under the rug. So while I understand why people may be pursuing those dollars, like those donation dollars, in the way that they feel they must, I also feel that the University of Maryland in Prince George's County should do its best to be attractive to students who are from Prince George's County. And I don't think that it's something that the university was really prioritizing. And I felt like removing Dr. Black's job was like the lightning rod. It was like the thing that made it that you could point to and say, like, this is like the thing that's that all these other things are that this is the thing that you can kind of put all these other things to and say that it's about this in particular, but it was all, but about but it is about everything. And yeah, I felt that students in general during the time felt that I felt that enrollment was a huge issue for people, but also retention. I knew a lot of people who felt that they had a hard time staying at Maryland or had a hard time getting resources if they were struggling at Maryland. I know for me, when I was, when I just needed like spaces, right? Like I went to the cultural center a lot. And that's something that I really clung to. And I, built a lot of relationships there. But I also knew other students that didn't see it that way, didn't want to go to the cultural center or felt like they had to be there if they like had something to do. But if not, then they couldn't just be there, which wasn't true. But it also was something that there just wasn't enough for African American students to feel like they had spaces, not even just spaces, but like investment from the university that made them feel like the university understood the unique struggles that may come from being a Black student and were responding to them in a way that made sure that those students were actually graduating with University of Maryland degrees.
I do want to back up a minute. You mentioned that Community Roots, STAIR was the umbrella sort of collective organization. Community Roots was its own organization, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How would you describe race relations among students and between students and faculty and staff on campus while you were there?
I think that it wildly varied because I felt like most places, like there are staff that you can gravitate towards and you can build relationships with. But I do feel that there was a lot of, it's weird to say segregation, it's almost like self-segregation, because I feel like people think about arts and humanities a little bit different than they think of some of the hard sciences. And I think that in a lot of ways, there are a lot of people who were in the hard sciences that didn't really value arts and humanities or like other things in a way that made them a little bit more turned off to like some of the causes that someone in like a women's studies or in an African American studies or like a Native American studies may tell you was important, right? So I felt that like that was a factor. But also I feel like within that being a factor, I felt like there was a little bit of like I didn't really understand how race was for engineering students, right? Or for like business students, because of the divide I was telling you about before, because I don't really feel like, sometimes it'd be kind of a bridge to get to some of the, you know, like the hard science students or the business students, where like they wouldn't really come out for stuff like that. Or like when you would say that like race is an issue on campus, they wouldn't really feel like that's like their jam or like something that they really needed to like say anything about. which I feel like is kind of like a condition of like, you know, like people, like it's hard to do that and say that. It's hard to believe that if you don't believe it, right? Like I can't make you believe it. But I do think that I felt a lot of that. I felt like a lot of people could see in general that like race is an issue, but it's very hard to attach it to like your own experience. So you could tell somebody like Black enrollment is down and they'd be like, well, I know some professors and I'm fine with my professors, right? And it's something that I feel like, yeah, like I feel like it was hard for me to say that like I know a professor who like treated me poorly because of my race, like directly. But it's easy to kind of look at things and say like, okay, like how is the school keeping up with like Black enrollment, or like how is it responding to Black events, or like how are things being talked about or treated in like crime reports or in other things where it's like where the Black experience matters in a way that isn't as simple as like, okay, like this person like does microaggressions, you know? Like I feel like that would be a lot easier to like describe if it was just like that, you know?
And I can imagine right along in line with what you're saying, with some students, if they have to be, even if a situation may be difficult, even if they do feel racial microaggressions, they want to graduate, obviously. And why would you? I mean, it would be really difficult to speak out if you have to see those same professors.
Exactly.
And they have some control over your career. So that totally makes sense. When you think about your time at the university, are there any sort of campus-wide or even sometimes organization-wide campus activities that stick out to you? Concerts, speakers, parties, those kind of cultural events?
Yeah, we threw a few. That was kind of the fun thing about, so I joined Community Roots as a freshman, and then like my sophomore year, I started doing like programs and events. And that was a lot of fun because you don't like, one, you're like, you're playing with house money, right? Like, this is like student events money. It's not like I have to like raise a lot of funds more than like, it's a lot more like lobbying and like trying to figure out how much stuff works as opposed to like actually like getting the money from somewhere, which is the hard part of putting on events. But we were able to do a lot of events. So my sophomore year, we started like a concert series. We had a concert series. And so we that year we were able to bring Immortal Technique. And so we hosted that at Hornbeck Plaza, which I guess now is where the Theodore Roosevelt statue is. Oh, not Theodore Roosevelt. How do I say Theodore Roosevelt? Frederick Douglass. Why would I say that? Very different people. Frederick Douglass statue. And we hosted a concert there, and like our thing was to try to make it as inclusive as possible. So we had about 10 or 15 openers, and they were all like students and local performers. And the concert was free, so we just wanted to have as many people there as possible. So that was fun. My senior year, we had a similar concert with Dead Prez, and Logic actually opened for Dead Prez. Like that was Logic. Around the time that I was graduating, Logic was like really starting to kick off at Maryland, but like at University of Maryland. So a lot of people who I knew just kind of knew him. So one of my friends DJed for him and was like, yeah, can you get him on here? And we were like, yeah, like we are able to like scrounge up some money to like get his fee. And it's just like funny because like that's, you know, fast forward 10 years and like that, you know, he's super duper famous. But like at the time, he was just like a local performer. Like, yeah, like you know, I want to perform. So that was cool. But we did. That was like our thing. Like, I really liked putting on events and like trying to make our student group something where people wanted to come to like something we were throwing, and then from that, like wanted to come to a meeting on a Thursday and meet somebody and. Yeah, just try to build community from, you know, trying to have some fun stuff.
Thank you. Other than the organizing we talked about a little bit earlier around Black student enrollment and Dr. Black, do you remember any other campus protests during your time there?
Yeah, there was my freshman year. This was probably the thing that made me want to, you know, do like organize and do stuff like more. Like my freshman year, I want to say this is like close to the end of fall semester, but someone had put a noose outside of Nibiru, and we, you know, like it was just like something that was like patently appalling to me. Like, and I think that that may have been my first real culture shock of college. Like I feel like I grew up in Southfield, which is a suburb of Detroit that's still like it's like 80 plus percent Black. I don't know if the demographics are changing any more now, but it's, you know, upper middle class suburb, but also very Black. You know, I grew up in a very Black community, even if it was like, you know, not like super affluent, but like not like but like working class. But like when I was at my dorm, I was, you know, one of like two or maybe three Black people on my floor, and so it's been the first time really ever that I was like a minority, in like an interpersonal space, just like growing up. Like most of the time, I'm in Southfield, which is like pretty Black, and it's like you go to Detroit and it's like more Black, and then, you know, it's almost like if you go north, like you see more white people, but it's like that's. That's why you don't go north like that, because like people know that it's not really safe for Black people, or it's not really like for Black people out there. And I'm sure that if you know anything about like, you know, like Central Michigan now, that you know it was probably worse back then. But you know, coming to University of Maryland, you know, I'm a minority, and so like something like this happens. So like up until this point, like I've made friends with everyone on my floor. It's not like I have like a problem with anyone. I'm good friends with everyone. We hang out, stuff like that. But then it's like something like this happens, and I'm just like, well, this is fucked up. Like, it's pretty unequivocally fucked up. Whoever did this, like, it's just not funny. Like, it's fucked up. And so, like, I'm going to this. And it's not even like I'm like challenging you to go as much as it's like, well, this is what I'm doing. Like, I would tell you guys if I'm going to go to a movie tonight, like, this is what I'm going to go do tonight. And like, it became like, oh, like, that's like not an us thing. And then it's like, well, what do you mean? Like, what is not an us thing about like someone putting the noose up? And then it's like little but little, like, your own naivete starts to crack, and you're just like, yeah, like, they don't really see these sort of things as problems. Like, maybe they're not your friends the way that you think that they're your friends. But like, yeah, that was probably like one of the bigger culture shocks for me in college, and like really like away from like one, that, and then two, like being like more intentional about like who I spent my time with. Because I felt like at the time it was just like people who I was around, and then like really that, and then some other things made me feel like, you know, some of these people I'm cool with, you know, like not all of them.
I remember when I went to college, one of the things they, well, as a new shiny teenager, one of the things they told us was the friends you make in your first year are almost never the friends in your fourth year, because sometimes that friendship is just I'm new here and I don't want to be alone, and so you gravitate to anybody. And then over time, just like you just discussed, over time you start to develop who your actual friends end up being. But I remember being really weirded out by that. Like, what do you mean? No, of course we'll still be friends. No.
And like, it's weird now because it's weird the people who you're still friends with, because, you know, at the time, like, either you knew or like you couldn't have known. Like, there's some people who are like, I like my freshman, that roommate who I told you about, who we like walked across, like, still to this day, if like when he was, because he does a lot of stuff now, but he was doing music, like he was touring. And so whenever I was like in a town where he was like playing, like I would come in, even if it was just like some small shows, like two drink minimum bar, like I would come and hang out and you know, see him play. But there are definitely people who it's like I spent a lot of time with them my freshman year, and then like by the end of my sophomore year, I was like, I don't really want to hang out with you like that.
I know we discussed Nyumbu Cultural Center a bit, but were there any other physical spaces on campus where you really felt comfortable? And then also, in contrast, were there places that you just didn't feel comfortable at all?
So places where I also felt comfortable, I spent a lot of time in Nyumbu. Like, I almost want to like make it like that was like home base like my entire junior year. Like, I spent a lot of time there. Also, the student involvement suite, the community room, like we had an office there, and so when I was in between classes, I would spend a lot of time there. I would study there. When we were doing the organizing with STAIR, like we did it basically all exclusively out of the student involvement suite office. So we would, you know, be there like to a point where it was like frustrating for other student groups, because, you know, we would just like have the door open, and then like people would just like, you know, we'd have five, six people in there, and we'd just be like having a discussion about something, and then, you know, that group of people would go to class, and then an hour later, another like five, six people would be in there. It just kind of became a hangout spot. And we did a lot of like informal planning of all types of organizing stuff there, because it just was the space where people just kind of, you know, spent an hour between classes. So that was a lot of fun. I stamp in general kind of like through, kind of like through that process, like because I spent a lot of time in the student involvement seat, like I spent a lot of time in STAMP in general. So got to know people in like MICA, or in like someone like the student, like C, like student events and entertainment. You know, just at the time, just like being within proximity to people, like you tried to build those relationships. So like if you were planning something, you could, you know, you knew who to talk to, and you knew like how to get it done in a way that would, make it happen as opposed to like kind of spinning your wheel. I think places that I didn't feel really welcome on campus. I mean, place I did feel another place I spent a lot of time was McKeldin, excuse me. During that my junior year, I just would spend a lot of just time there studying. But as far as places I didn't feel comfortable, I felt like I didn't feel the most comfortable on South Campus most of the time. And not because it wasn't like fun. I just felt like as a freshman, I didn't really spend that much time on South Campus. And then by the time I was like an upperclassman, I wasn't really on campus. So I just wasn't really familiar with South Campus. But I didn't really feel like unwelcome. I don't know. I never really felt comfortable seeing campus police. Campus police always made me uncomfortable. I had, it's funny now, like if you, I'm not sure if you can like visualize campus right now for me, but there's some like high rises on Knox Road that are being built up, like right across the street from it's South Campus. I don't remember what the dorm is, but like on like that strip, Knox Road, right opposite where the CVS and like the Jason's Deli, like that stuff is. But up that street before those high rises, there just used to be a bunch of little like single story homes. And they were, really gross. But like, we used to call them the Knox boxes because they were just like these little single family homes that like different landlords owned and would rent them out to students. And so I had a friend of mine who was he was renting out a place at one of the Knox boxes. A friend of mine, he's white and Chilean, so white passing. We're on the lawn, like me, a friend, like his girlfriend at the time, who was black, another friend of ours who's also black. We're on his lawn, like we were all going to go somewhere. He shoes back into his house because he forgot something. So it's just like the three of us on the lawn. Opposite us, and this is why I'm trying to like see if you can visualize it, but there is like to this day, there's like a frat house there. And like that frat house was always Friday night, like you would expect, like people playing beer pong, like sloshed, people drinking out in public. Friday night couch part. We're at the top of the intersection, like just waiting, like we're just standing. Cop car rolls past us, down the hill, around, back up the hill. Turns on the lights. And so we're just standing here. Like we clocked this car the whole way. The cop asks, what are you guys doing here? It's like, we go here. But like, what are you doing? Like we're waiting for our friend. Like we go here. Like, can you get your hands out of your pockets? Like my friend who's with us, like jokes, like, what do you what do you think he's gonna do? Like, and it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what he's gonna do. But it's like you couldn't convince these people that like what was occurring behind them could be like an actionable offense, right? Like public drinking with people of various age who you do not know. And but like the three of us loitering is like you gotta pull the car over and like ask us for ID. And of course, like when my friend comes out of the house and can say that like these black people are with me, like it's not that much of a it's not a big deal anymore, right? But like stuff like that happened a lot at University of Maryland. And I'd hear a lot of stories about stuff like that at University of Maryland where, you would have to like, convince an officer that like a white student doing something was like actionable. Like meanwhile, like you'd get another crime report every day about like some black person doing something. And like the description is like of a person who looks like me, right? Like, which is to say, like someone who could be a lawyer. or someone who could be a professor, right? Like I've heard stories from professors who've been profiled on campus. So that I feel like was something that wasn't like a certain place made me feel uncomfortable, but I always felt like campus police were not trying to keep me safe at the very least. I felt like if they were trying to keep people safe, it definitely wasn't me. Which kind of, in general, like was not like was one of the things that's like in the air, but not like something you can nail down in some of the protests that we had, because it's like there's this air on campus that like not only is like we're avoiding PG County that we are like a part of, but it's like people who look like people who could live in PG County don't feel welcome on campus, or aren't made to feel welcome on campus, or like are seen as targets by campus police. Like they don't want people who are from PG County to be on campus if they don't have quote unquote business, which is, part of it.
Thank you. I think you mentioned a couple, but were there particular faculty or staff members that stick out to you as being supportive or people you could talk to or confide in on campus?
Yeah, for sure. So the staff at the Nimbrew Cultural Center, definitely all of them there were huge influences. And I feel like beyond college, Solomon Kamajong, I spent hours at his office. We would just like hang out, we would talk. Like I went to Black Male Initiative meetings. He like invited me to like conferences and things like that. When I was applying to law school, he wrote me a letter of recommendation. There's definitely someone who, went above and beyond to like be a mentor and try to like really make sure that like if he could, do something to help a brother out, he would. Dr. Ziegler and Ms. Carswell the same way. They really, I feel like if they see you at the cultural center, they remember you at the cultural center. They really attach to you like family, and they really like want you to want students like that to be a part of like the glue that keeps it together. So I really enjoyed going to I really enjoyed everything that the Cultural Center did, and I really feel like that was like a big part of my college experience. Also, my American Studies academic advisor, Joe Paoletti. She was a great advisor and really helped me graduate, or really like helped me figure out how I was going to graduate. And it didn't really feel really, I feel like a lot of people have advisors and it feels like they're just kind of like checking boxes for you. But I really felt like she wanted to, one, she recognized that I was trying to do something that was difficult on like changing my major so late. And then two, she wanted to make sure that if I was serious about it, that she was like doing everything that she could to make sure that I did it. And so, I had to like, show her that I was serious about it, but she was, she really did help me, get done. And she also helped me, after I was done, she helped me with the letter of recommendation when I was applying to law school. But yeah, there were, I feel like there were a lot of people when it shook out who really, like around campus, like were who tried to make you feel like comfortable and really tried to feel like there were people you could go to. But I definitely feel like the people at the cultural center were probably the most the people that I really gravitated to the most.
Now, conversely, were there professors or staff members that stick out to you as not being remotely supportive of you or other Black students? And I guess in this way, I'm asking antagonistic.
So antagonist. So again, like I was saying, like it's really like when there's like issues like that, it's really like, well, that's like the issue, and like that was like a big fucking deal. I had one professor who like stuck out to me, and honestly, I cannot remember her name. But it was an American Studies professor. I was Again, like I transferred all these credits. I'm at my So I'd finished my, so this is the end of my senior year. So the end of the spring semester of my senior year, I didn't have enough credits to graduate, but I was within enough credits that I could take them in the summer, right? Like I could take 2, 3 credit courses, get the 6 credits I needed and be done. And then just like walk in the winter or never, like whatever, I'd be done. So took a class. So I took a class summer one, no problem. The second class that I picked intentionally one because it was American Studies, and I needed general ed credits, right? Like I'd done all of the coursework for American Studies, done the thesis, all of that shit. Like don't need to do another American Studies class. But I took this American Studies class because it's, I mean, like this was 10 years ago, but fully remote, online. You know, I wanted something where I could like be engaged with it. And so there's like 4-ish major assignments for like the whole semester, and then like some smaller assignments that you do here and there. And so, because it's only like 4 weeks, it was like super because it's summer too. And so like I get my grade back from my first assignment, and I got like 40%, like not even 50% on it. And it's not like something where I like phoned it in. It's like I thought I did the assignment the way that it was written. I emailed the professor. I'm like, I don't like, you know, let me know what's going on here. I don't get a response. In that time, you know, again, it's like a week goes by. Another assignment is due. I do the assignment, turn in the assignment. I get like the identical grade, like 40%, like not even 50%. And so I emailed the professor again, and I'm like, you know, I got, you know, basically the same grade on these two assignments. You know, I'm trying to get in touch with you. I don't even know if I can pass at this point. Like, what's going on? Like, what can we do? And she emails me back, like, one, that it's my fault for not getting in touch with her because other students are able to get in touch with her, and she does, you know, office hours with other students, and like I haven't been diligent enough. We're trying to get in touch with her. And that two, clearly I'm phoning in the coursework because I don't respect how difficult American Studies is, and that it's not something that's easy, but students who transfer like yourself think it's easy. So like I'm like one, I just like, can't believe it. Like two, I just like so I write a response. I'm like one, I emailed you 2 weeks ago. Like, so I don't know how it's my responsibility to get in touch with you when I did. Like, if you don't respond to an email, like I can't do anything more than that. Like, I guess I can hunt you down, but my schedule doesn't line up with the office hours, is why I emailed you. And also, like, I don't even know what the issue is, right? Like, you just basically failed me on this. Like, I don't even know why I got less than 50%. Like, even if I got a D, like, why is it 40? One, two, like, if you can see my transcript to know that I transferred, then you know that, like, I have the credit hours to not take this class. Like, I've done all of the credit coursework for my degree from University of Maryland to say American Studies. Like, I never have to take this class for that to happen. But obviously, like, you're not grading me on a fair scale, so I'm just going to withdraw from this class because, like, this isn't, like, I'm not gonna, like, get on this hamster wheel for you. And I mean, I think she sent me something snarky back. I didn't respond. I think it may have been past the withdrawal point. So I think I went into withdrawal, and I think they may not have been able to let me. But I emailed my academic advisor, Joe Pele, and I was like, yeah, like this is what happened. Like I turned in the assignments the way that I thought assignments are to be turned in. I got a grade, I responded to the grade, and now it's like, you know, I don't respect the coursework. And so she, you know, I think she was kind of like, you know, this is, you know, messed up and I'll handle it sort of thing. But I think for me, I was already kind of mentally like defeated by it, so to speak. Like I wasn't trying to run this down or try to see where I could take it. As much as I was just kind of like, wow, that like you really like that's like an idea that you fomented, right? Like that's not something that you just kind of like happened across some of my answers and then like thought that I wasn't trying. Like you like knew my background and decided that like my background wasn't the re was the reason that I wasn't going to get this grade. And that was something that was really jarring for me because I just really felt one, like beyond the fact that like I'm going to like take this F, which is just like means a lot. Like I told you about like being Nigerian, like it's not something where I come home with Fs. Like it's something where I like you gotta explain to your family, like you know, like someone who was on academic probation is like changing his grades around, like okay, it's like what are you doing now? And it's like I didn't do anything. This teacher treated me unfairly, and it's like people don't believe you. So this guy does this other level of gaslighting, and then on top of that, it's like then you just have to bite the bullet, and I like had to take a 3-credit course for fall semester the next for I had to take a 10-credit course 3-credit course that fall and like find somewhere where I could live close enough to campus and you know spend 2 months that I didn't need to spend you know taking another class because you know I didn't really get a fair shake in this class but you know like it like now it's like 10 plus years later like there's been a lot of other struggles to complain about in life, but it's something that definitely sticks with me because, you know, like it's hard to, you know, like people racializing things, and like I think the professor was black, was a black lady, but beyond like whether or not it's like a racial issue or just like another microaggression, like you don't, like it's very violating to feel like you're trying to do things in a certain way or like do things the way that you think you're supposed to. And then like someone has like made up their mind that like you're the type of person that like doesn't do that. So like I'm not gonna give you the respect or like the professional courtesy to just like do things in a way that may surprise you. But yeah, that was probably my roughest experience with like an individual professor.
Could you walk me through, well, I think we kind of just discussed them, but your last memories of being on campus as an undergraduate student?
So that was kind of it. It's interesting because like I don't want to make it seem like it was all bad, so to speak. So that last class that I did take, it was African American Studies, I think like 101, because even though I definitely didn't need to take an African American Studies 101 class, like I was like I hadn't taken that many African American Studies classes and I can take like any credit. So I took like an African American Studies 101 class. And it was a great class. It was with Professor Jonathan England. Professor England actually passed away in 2020. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people on campus really cared about Professor England. And I really had a great time in that class. And I really enjoyed, you know, taking that class and meeting Dr. England. I mean, Professor England. And I don't regret it, even if it was like kind of a hassle for other reasons. Like, I do think that it was a great experience taking that class.
So you graduate in 2011. What are your next
Yes.
steps? What happens to you next?
So I graduate in 2011, and then I go to Nigeria for like a week, for like 2 weeks with my family. And then after that, I am kind of back home in Southfield for a little bit. I get a job in New York City. So I'm doing community organizing with New York Communities for Change in Flatbush, Brooklyn. And so that was one another like crazy experience to be in New York. I'd never been to New York City at all really before, outside of like some short trips when I was at Maryland, but generally speaking, like going to New York was still like very new and foreign. And so I was in New York for like a year and some change before like things, you know, it's not an easy place to live, especially if you're, you know, fresh out of college. So I worked in New York Communities for Change for about 8 months, and then another like 5 months I worked with the New York Hotel and Motel Trades Council, which were both organizing jobs but like very different types of jobs. Community organizing with New York Communities for Change is a lot of like door knocking, a lot of direct action, a lot of, like being there, holding a sign, being at the march, yelling at people, trying to affect change in like really at the grassroots level, like for real. Then union organizing was a lot more like buttoned up, especially like the Hotel Trades Council. Like they represent, so they're part of like a larger network of hotel unions, but the New York Trades Council has a lot of sway and a lot of like New York to it. So it's a lot more suit and tie sort of union. And a lot more like businessy, which was like very different from the stuff that I was doing before. But it did kind of like open my perspective as far as like different types of organizing. So like after that, I moved back to Detroit for like a year, and then I wasn't really working. I was kind of like part time. I was kind of doing stuff part time. And then had an opportunity to work with the National Nurses United in California. So I moved to Glendale and then San Diego. That was right after college. Well, I mean, first few years after college, as I say, that's like 2011 to like 2014. And then, yeah, I ended that job. I was at that job for like 8 months, ended that job, and then started law school a little bit after that in 2015. And then, yeah, kind of the rest is history from there.
Which law school did you attend?
So I went to UDC, University of District of Columbia, David A. Clark School of Law.
And you finished law school in 18?
Yeah, so I finished in 2018. I passed the bar in 2020, and so I've been working with Rising for Justice, which was formerly DC Law Students in Court, in the tenant justice department. So I work with tenants who are facing eviction. I can represent them for little to no cost, and I can help them with other legal issues relating to landlord-tenant law.
What's been your relationship to the university since graduation?
So I really haven't had too much relationship to the university itself, post-graduation. I have, visited campus a few times with the community group, so with Community Roots. So a few years ago, like in 2015, maybe, so like around 2015 or 16, around when I started law school, I, would come and like visit campus and come to a few meetings. Generally speaking, I feel like, and then there's some people on campus who I try to keep relationships with. Another professor who I didn't really mention before was Jason Nichols. That's another professor who who I had a relationship with when I was on campus, who I still keep in touch with. Yeah, I think that generally speaking, I didn't have too much connection to the university itself. Earlier this year, I bought a house in College Park. Me and my wife bought a house off of Metzerat. It's interesting now being like close to campus as an alumni, because now my interaction with the area is very different as a homeowner versus like as a student. But also I'm trying to, take advantage of, some of the university things a little bit more. I joined the Alumni Association. because I want to join the gym. And hopefully I can join and get the gym membership, and that'll be Berkeley Alumni Association membership. But yeah.
So
I was never really like big into I follow the football and basketball, but I've never really been huge into going to the games. Even when I was a student, I feel like I would go, but then I would kind of get bored. I felt like most Saturdays I would, a lot of Saturdays I would play football with a few guys on like in front of La Plata by the rec center. But yeah, so I'm not really like the sports team, like rah-rah person, unless they're like really, really good. So I feel like I'm not like super duper close unless they're like really, really good.
I have one more formal question to close out the interview, but in looking at your organizing experiences on campus and then kind of your career trajectory, what do you think draws you to organizing and community type work?
I think there's a few things. Like I don't consider myself that religious, but I did grow up Catholic, and I like, did grow up like in church, and I really feel some level of duty to try to help people in a way that's beyond charity, like giving people tools to help themselves, or advocating for people who have less than you, in a way that I feel like I identify with. Like I really do think that it's something that I want to be a part of how I define myself. And then I also, I feel like I'm big into people power, and it sounds really cliche, but I do think that organizing around issues has a lot of like power in it. In so much as like you're taking ownership of the issue, like you're looking for solutions, like you're reaching out to your neighbors, you're speaking with them, like you're explaining what the issue is, like you're building coalitions, like there's power in like groundswell and like getting people to understand what the issue is and like act on it. I felt like that was really empowering in like the Dr. Black thing, is that like, you know, my mentors were able to like let me know what the issue was, and I was able to like talk to Dr. Black and like know what the issue was, and like talk to other people, and then like they knew what the issue was, and they all felt the same way, like we needed to do something. And so it wasn't like I'm telling people what to do or where to be or how to feel, like I'm you know, a conduit for something that's happening, and you know, I need to like think, I need to give people an outlet for this that isn't just like, you know, to sit in their own spaces and to be upset. And so I feel like organizing is that for me. It's like the ability to like do something about it, right? Like if you have a bad experience at work, you know, you could go home and you can like complain about your bad experience at work, or you can meet with your coworkers and we can do something about it. And there's risks in doing something about it, and there's, you know, ways to do something about it that are good and bad, but organizing is doing something about it, as opposed to just kind of like waiting for it to happen again, you know? And so I feel like that was definitely something that I feel was, you know, kind of sparked at University of Maryland.
And in terms of the closing question, are there, is there advice or closing words you have, considering your time at the University of Maryland, that you could share as a message to current or future students? And in this case, with this project, particularly Black and African-American students.
I would say, you know, invest face time at the Cultural Center, at Newburgh Cultural Center. And like the people there and the resources there are for Black youth or for Black retention. Like they want to help, like it's there for you to get that level of help. And if there is any kind of trepidation or like shame or anxiety or anything that you may feel about going to the Black Cultural Center, like go there and feel it and be uncomfortable and be okay with that. You know, the same way that if you were going to go to a white space and you weren't sure if you were going to be accepted there, like go there and be uncomfortable because it's fruitful. There's a lot of stuff there that can be fruitful for you. And if you go there and it's isn't your cup of tea, like that's okay too. But I think that, you know, include like Black spaces and Black people in like your level of discomfort. Don't be so like rigid in the way that you see things that you're not willing to like be in uncomfortable spaces surrounded by other people of color, or other people who may not look like you, right? Like other people who may not look like you, like be okay with being in those uncomfortable spaces. But you know, Black people to Black people, like don't be so focused on Black people being perfect that you kind of miss out on being in some uncomfortable spaces and learning from some people who look like you. You know, for people who may not want to gravitate towards that, you know, automatically. And then I would say like for people who are just like coming out and like trying to, you know, learn the campus and like learn themselves, just be okay with it not going in a straight line. You know, I think that whether it be like undergrad or law school or like after law school or whatever, like it's never been easy as I expected it to be. And that's okay. You know, like you have like perseverance is something that, you know, we all have to draw from and that we can support each other through, but like definitely don't feel like it's something that you're experiencing and other people aren't experiencing.
I want to thank you again for taking time out of your weekend to do this interview with me. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. If I have any follow-up questions, is it okay to reach out again?
Yeah, feel free. I know one of my emails, I CC'd my personal email.
Yes, I have that one, in our files, the
Great, great,
personal.
great. So if you want to email me there, that'd be great. But yeah, if you do have any other questions, feel free to let me know.
Okay, thank you so much for your
All right.
time.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.